Good morning, everyone. So we're reading in Book 2,
Book of the Traveler of the Worlds,
Canto 5, The Godheads of the Little Life. And we read just the first sentence on that page. Helpless and indistinct came pleasure and pain, trembling with the first faint thrills of a world soul. In the previous canto and in this one, Sri Aurobindo is giving us different ways of looking at the evolutionary process. And last week we read about the outset of this enigmatic world in a very poetic way. He gave us a picture more or less of the contemporary Big Bang theory. But then he seems to mock that a little bit. He says that thus has been made this real impossible world, or so it seems to man's audacious mind. And then he says we have to do that. Humanity has to work things out like that. Trying to understand the universe around us with our own instruments of sense and mind. This is the way that we can grow gradually in knowledge. And then he started to tell us this other way of looking at it, that it's all the work of a spirit that is within. That spirit was inhabiting matter, and then that dreamer, that dreaming spirit in all the matter in the universe stirred a little bit, began to move in his sleep. And then the life force woke up, a dream of living woke in matter's heart. And then comes this emergence. So that a life was born that follows the law of matter. That's all those little creatures, material, vital creatures that we saw in the previous canto. But as that life force in matter wakes up, then somehow this first faint thrills of a world soul which is inhabiting all this comes in the form of pleasure and pain. We think that the most primitive life forms, they can somehow distinguish. They are attracted this way, or they are repelled that way. There's some that is a form of life response, which we find even in plants, which spread out, he says, their tendril fingers of desire. If you have a creeper on growing on the side of your house, you can see how it puts out these tendril fingers and it feels around, and if it gets hold of a crack, then it pulls itself up that way. This is this beginning of the pleasure and pain principle in living things. So that's what comes next, this plant life. Where shall we start today? Patty, will you start? Page 157. Line 215.
Strength of life could not cry or move, yet broke into beauty, signing some deep delight, an inarticulate sensibility. The heart of an unknowing world ran through its somnolent torpor, and there stirred a vague, uncertain thrill, a wandering heat, a dim unclosing as of secret eyes. Infant self-feeling grew, and birth was born. A godhead woke, but lay with dreaming limbs. Her house refused to open its sealed doors. Insentient to our eyes that only see the form, the act, and not the imprisoned god, life hid in her pulse a cult of growth and power, a consciousness with mute, stifled beats of sense. A mind suppressed that knew not yet of thought, an inner spirit that could only be.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about this passage?
Yes. Hmm. This is suggesting to me that mind was already there. And for some reason, from a lecture in another class some time ago, I had gotten the idea that the mind power waited a while before it entered the material scene. Mm. But this is indicating...
But this is about life. Mm? Life. But behind life, you are right, there's this spirit. The spirit was there already in matter, and that spirit has the power of consciousness, of all the different kinds of consciousness. I think even the physicists are beginning to realize this now, that all those potentialities must have been there from the beginning. But he's telling us now about this first waking up of life. He helps us though, no?
Yes.
Well, it's the mind, but it's still suppressed. It's not conscious. Yes. Mm-hmm. First, there's this. The life force is the force expresses itself in beauty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's much more poetic. It broke into beauty. It was hidden there, and whoops, out it comes. You look at the...
blossom?
It is a blossom, yeah. But also maybe breaking out of out from matter. No? And that's a signal. That beauty of the natural world is a signal that within all this, experiencing all this, there's a being, a consciousness that experiences delight, and the beauty is the expression of that delight. And then there's this inarticulate sensibility. The plant feels. I mean, now we know this. We have known this for half a century at least since the first experiments were done, which clearly showed that plants feel and suffer and remember and have a consciousness, but they can't move. They're stuck where they are. They can move a little bit. Some olive trees, they say, walk. They move from year to year. They spread out their roots slowly and draw them in somewhere else, and like that. So they can move in a way, you know, and they can't. They can't cry out in a way that we can hear. But I remember a biologist who worked with us in the in Aspiration School in the very early days. He had fixed up some kind of electronic device, and he showed us clearly that when you cut the carrot, it screams. Hmm? And it goes on screaming for maybe about half an hour. And then he says that carrot is dead. It won't be able to feed you. It won't be able to nourish you anymore. So it impressed our children very, very much, you can imagine. Scream of the carrot or the cabbage leaf if you tear it. They're emitting something. And with his instrument, he was able to express that in sound, give it a sound expression, which our ears unassisted ears would not have been able to.
Does that mean that vegetables that are cooked are not nourishing because they're dead?
I think they maybe have less prana in them. Mm. Yes, that's at least the argument of the people who the raw food specialists. Other people say no, the nutrients, if you don't overcook them. It's easier for your body to assimilate if they're cooked. So I'm not really entering into this argument. Well, to us it sounds like pain. But you can say that when there's a wound, that carrot has been whole, undamaged. When it is cut, then some of its energy leaks out. And he was catching that, and we heard it in the sound of a noise.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, go ahead.
Biologists have also shown that even the cells at the very small level, the cells have intelligence and sensitivity.
Yes, yes. It's all there, this inarticulate sensibility. And because they can't express themselves in our language and the way that we are used to, we think they're insensible. But it says that here somewhere, no? No, I thought I read that, but anyway. So anyway, that inarticulate sensibility, it's like a beating heart of this world that doesn't have knowledge in the way that we have knowledge. But it wakes up something, a vague, uncertain thrill, a wandering beat, a dim unclosing as of secret eyes. So that consciousness goes on developing, waking up more and more. And even, he says here, infant self-feeling grew. Some kind of self-identification. There's another great zoologist who has, you might have heard his name, Konrad Lorenz. He somehow proved that the fact that some fish, male fish, fight each other and others do other things, it shows that they distinguish themselves as a separate entity from other similar entities. It means they're not totally identified with their environment. They have a sense, this infant self-feeling. Birth was born, the birth possibility of the birth of separate individuals. So there's a Godhead there, the goddess of this level of life. But she's not moving. It's like when we wake up in the morning. The body is still dreaming, it doesn't want to move immediately. Her house, the house in which the consciousness lives, it has windows and doors and so on. But when we sleep, we close all those senses. But she begins to open her eyes. So she seems insentient. It seems that though to us that those life forms have no feeling, no capacity to feel. But we can only think that because we are only seeing the outside, the form, the act. We don't see the imprisoned God, the consciousness which is there in the form, in that, yes. Yes, that's what he's talking about, yeah. The body. But it may be the body of a plant, not a physical body. Yes. So the
But to the sense, the body is a divine temple. Your soul is in the body. Not only in the body, but
yes. So that is true also at this very early stage of life. There's a spirit inhabiting, so consciousness is there. But it's like when we are asleep, we close all the doors. You know, that's what sleep is, no? We withdraw our consciousness deep inside the house, close the windows and doors. It's beautifully described in Canto 1 when Savitri wakes up. No, it says that she opens her windows on the world, remembers what day it is. And so, but the plants maybe are not fully aware of that yet. Or they know, oh, now they don't think in words, but it is day, the sun is there, lovely sun, and the blossoms open and they turn towards the sun. No? And then in the evening, Mother says, then they kind of shut down. She says they feel sorrow even. Oh, it's gone away. No? She says there's a very special feeling of loss and aspiration in the evening hours as everything shuts down. You might feel that sometimes. Yeah. So this is because life, the life goddess who's in whom all this is happening, she hides in this hidden pulse of growth and power, she's hiding a consciousness. and that consciousness experiences these mute, stifled beats of sense. It's, Shobindo seems to suggest that just like the heart is throbbing through the body of the plant, as through our body, there's like a pulse, and the activity of the senses depends on that. And then there's a mind, but that mind doesn't yet know how to think. It is still suppressed. The spirit is there, but it's inert. It doesn't have much capacity to move. It can only be. It's there. It's a little bit conscious. It doesn't move much.
At what stage did the psychic being emerge?
Well, the psychic being must have been there all the time, but how can it express itself? Even in us, it can't express itself much. We know that it's there. Somehow it has guided us to come here, but because of the limitations of the rest of our apparatus, the body, the life force, the mind, the spirit, it can't express itself much.
But it's present in both animals and plants.
Yes, and I think I must have told you this story about Uddha, one of Mother's disciples. He told her, "Mother, I had a dream or a vision or something. I was a pebble on the beach, and you and Sri Aurobindo were both there, and you were pebbles too." And she said, "Yes, it is right. The consciousness has been there. Even the matter could never have formed if that consciousness hadn't been there, bringing the atoms together, creating all the different elements, lighting the stars. There was never a time when it was not there. But it hasn't been there so much in individualized forms." I think just a little bit further on, we have this. We heard Mother reading, that a spirit was there which stood behind the little personal form, but claimed not yet this earthly embodiment. It's there looking after the individual form, but it hasn't fully entered into it. Something like this must happen when we are born. A very, very few beings like the mother, some people, they clearly remember choosing their parents and that they looked after the whole business of choosing the environment and the conditions of the birth. But that's very, very rare. Normally, all that work is being done by a spirit which hasn't yet claimed the earthly embodiment. It can happen at different times, at the moment of birth or later on. At least that's how I've understood it.
I think Mother said the flowers are the psychic beings of the plant. So they are expressing the psychic being.
They're expressing the psychic being, but actually flowers are the sexual organs of the plant. From the external point of view.
What I could get from reading Chirandu and Mother, they said that psychic being is only with human being. They are not doubled up individuality.
It becomes more individualized in the human being. And in many human beings, it's not fully individualized.
It's not there in animals or plants, what I understand.
Yeah. But I don't be too dogmatic about it, this. What are we talking about? What do we mean? I've experienced it myself, that when a favorite dog died, when we buried it, other dogs followed. And one of those little dogs became the reincarnation of that dog that died. And Mother says that's how it often happens with animals. They very quickly move into another form. Well, she was pregnant, I think. Mother was pregnant into one of those puppies, the spirit. And this happens with humans too. So, but here he's speaking about this waking up of life in material forms. He told it to us in another way in the previous canto. Now he's doing it in this way, not so much from the point of view of material form, but the way that the spirit within is waking up. So will you read, Karen?
"At first, she raised no voice, no motion there, only she clung with her roots to the safe earth, thrilled dumbly to the shocks of rain and breeze, and put out tender fingers of desire. The strength in her yearning for sun and light felt not the embrace that made her breathe and live. Absorbed, she dreamed content, beauty, and human. At last, the charmed immensity looked forth. Astir, vibrant, hungering, she groped for mind. Then slowly, sense quivered and hope cleared out. She forced the reluctant mold to grow over her. The magic was chiseled on a conscious form. Its tranced vibrations rhythmed a quick response, and luminous stirrings prompted brain and nerve, awoke in matter, spirit's identity, and in a body lit the miracle of the heart's love and the soul's witness gaze.
Thank you. This is the life goddess. At first, she can't make any sound, she can't move, but she's charged with world power. She's absolutely full of all that universal force, instinct with living force. But to start with, she just clings with her roots to the safe earth. And she's dumbly, thrilling, responding to the shocks of rays of sunlight and breeze, and putting out her tendril fingers of desire. And she's feeling this yearning for sun and light. She doesn't feel the embrace of the spirit, the consciousness that's making her breathe and live. She's absorbed, she's dreaming content with beauty, beauty of form and color, hue. But just as the dreamer changed a little his pose of stone and a new phase begins, now in life too. At last, the charmed immensity, that immense power who's as if under a spell, she looks out, wakes up, astir, vibrant, hungering, she groped for mind. She needs another kind of consciousness. And then slowly sense. Senses are not just feeling, it's that they give us information, no, about what we are feeling. Sense quivered and thought peered out. It begins to peep out. So this life force forced the reluctant mold. So the body is not only our house, it's our mold, it's the shape, no? And it's reluctant, it's inert, it doesn't want to be conscious. But she forces it to grow aware, and eventually she chisels like a sculpture the magic of a conscious form. Animals are wonderfully conscious in their forms, no? The way their bodies react. And once there's a conscious form, then those vibrations, they're still in trance, but there's a kind of rhythm. They respond to the shocks of sense. And luminous stirrings prompted brain and nerve. We don't think because we've got brains. We don't sense because we've got nerves. We've got a brain and nerves because the senses need channels and vessels, and the brain needs some kind of support for its activities. Not so much for thought as for sensing. So then the spirit's identity, perhaps this is where the psychic being becomes to be a bit more formed and conscious, wakes up in matter and lit in a being, lit the miracle of the heart's love and the soul's witness gaze. These are things that matter can't do itself. The physical heart just by itself just beats, no? Where does the love come from? It comes from that spirit, the identity of the spirit that's within, and that soul that can look out and see the world around it, even see itself. Actually, the nervous system is spread throughout the body, and I think it has 7 centers. This one here is very important. If there's anything wrong there, everything goes wrong. So I think there are 7 centers. And the nervous system is spread out through the whole body. And but imagine those first bodies that didn't have a nervous system. They didn't have anything like a brain. They still were living. Look at ants, termites, you know, even butterflies. They have a map of their journey and they travel for 4,000 miles and back without any, what we would call a nervous system or a brain. That has come from the pressure of the need of the indwelling spirit for greater subtlety in experience and self-expression. You want to share something, Karen? You have something you want?
I was confused, sorry, I should have asked you maybe, but I was confused about what the vote was referring to, but I was trying to make me understand. I just didn't understand the construction.
What was it?
I think the vote in matter, spirit, it was referring to spirit identity.
Yes, right. This is another kind of psychology, isn't it? Another understanding of the operations of spirit in body consciousness. So the process continues. Who's next? Tuan.
The bells and I've been seeing this, there could break out fragments of some grass, it goes to the ground, and vivid glimpses of a secret self. And the doubtful seeds and thoughts of shades to be provoked from the inconscient soul of things. And red and flowed and gone between the earth and sky, handed by death, but holding still the blade and dragged to grief of all the fallen ones. Then man was molded from the original wood. The thinking mind had come to live life's moods, the teenage tool of an age mixed and varied. An intelligence, half
witness, half machine. So he has told us about this process from another point of view, no, in the previous canto. But now it's from this inner point of view. There's a will behind, which is impelling these developments. And because of the pressure of the will, there could break out in fragmentary forms some vast impulse to become. The life can become so much more than just those tiny little primitive beings. There are vivid glimpses of some secret self, some possibility that's not yet manifested. And the doubtful seeds and force of shapes to be awoke from the inconscient swoon of things. It's such an interesting way of looking at the evolution of forms. Here we have these hands, but they've evolved from funny little stubs on fish. So there was a will behind that has been driving all this development. Of course, perhaps in response to pressures from environment, from opportunities offered by environment, but the will behind, that's really the crucial thing. So in this way, an animal creation wakes up from the inconscient swoon of things, and it does all the things that animals do. It crept, and ran and flew and called between the earth and sky. The animal creation is hunted by death, but there's a will to live, no? And also a delight, a happiness, glad to breathe, if only for a while. And we human beings belong in our bodies to that animal creation. Then man was molded from the original brute. But the difference is that a thinking mind had come to lift life's moods. That thinking mind, it's got a sharp edge, a keen-edged tool of a nature that is still mixed and vague. It's an intelligence that's half witness. It has some capacity of observation, but half of it is machine, just automatic response to stimuli. To read. Would you read? Yes?
The succeeding driver of her wheel of works, mission to witty and record her drift, and fix its rule on her inconstant powers. This master spring of ability and genuine aspire to enlighten its user and refine lifting to a vision of the internal power, the absorbed mechanics, hold initiative. He raised his eyes. Heaven light mirrored her face.
Thank you. So this thinking mind is the tool of a nature that is still mixed and vague. So it is also mixed, this intelligence. It's half witness, half machine. But that mind then seems to be the driver, the motive force of what nature does. And its task is, it's missioned to motive, to give a push to her drift, her direction, and to record it, to note it down, and fix its law on her inconstant powers, her powers that are still vague and mixed. This mind is the master spring of a delicate enginery, like clockwork. No, there has to be a master spring. It aspired to enlighten its user, to bring light and consciousness to the being which it is driving around, and to refine it, make it more conscious, lifting it up to a vision of that indwelling power, that nature. And she does that through the mechanic, through the intelligence, the absorbed mechanic's crude initiative. She lifts that up to a higher kind of consciousness and vision. So it's he, the mechanic, the conscious individual, raises his eyes. Heaven light mirrors a face. Completely new kind of consciousness. Patricia?
Amazed at the words wrought in her mystic sleep, she looked upon the world that she had made, wondering down the sea, the great automaton. She paused to understand herself and aim. Pondering, she learned to act by conscious rule. A vision measure guided her rhythmic steps, thought bordered her instincts, her frame of will, and
Thank you. This is in human beings, no? Through human beings, through human consciousness, nature becomes conscious. Through us, she observes herself and what she's done. And she's amazed. In us, we can be amazed what nature has done through the eons to bring everything to this state. We can look at the world that she's made, including us. So wondering now sees this great automaton. She's been working automatically, driven by the will from behind. But now she pauses to understand herself and her aim. What are we here for? So human beings use this power of thought to think a little bit. And maybe it's better not to throw the plastic bags into the river. Maybe we can do something better with them, no? Some kind of visioned measure can guide her rhythmic steps. Thought, bordered, limited her instincts with a frame of will. We learn not just to automatically, instinctively do things. Use the power of thought and will to do something wiser. Lighting up her blinded urge with a conscious idea. So on that normal, natural mass of impulses and reflexes, no? On this drift of the inconscient, pushed, maybe guided, this mystery of all of nature's unthinking, accurate steps. They're so amazingly accurate. If we look into the structure of this stone that's here, how perfect it is. Nature, it says, stuck the specious image of a self. I think it's the sense of ego. I did it. A living idol of disfigured spirit. And this power of thought has an effect on matter itself. The bodies become more conscious. They're thinking if they have a brain in them. Even the chemic cells become more conscious. So an individual being can be shaped out of all this driven or guided inconscient force. Naren. Yes. So she here, nature, no? The seraph is the most powerful kind of angel. And of course it has great powerful wings. The soul is a seraph, powerful wings. But at this stage, that seraph soul is not fully activated. The human stuff is being lit up by these other forces, no? Something is coming, some dreams and this celestial flash, and they are lighting up these possibilities in us. So one of the possibilities is our human love. It can't last long. It's fragile, perishable. But what it does, it's based on ego, and it's got these very fragile wings like moths, but still, that's there to help the soul to fly a little bit. That is a new development, that love is a surface glamour of brief date. It lasts a little while. It's soon extinguished, blown out by a scanty breath of time. Just a very little breath will put out that fragile human love. But still, its real function is to lift the seraph soul. So there's the love, the human love. There's joy comes, joy that makes us forget that we are mortal, carries us away. No? Rarely, a rare visitor who leaves, who soon leaves, betimes. It means quickly he goes away. But when it comes, it makes all things seem beautiful for an hour. And the other thing that comes are hopes. Those hopes lift us up beyond our earthliest base, but they soon fade away to drab realities, boring everyday realities. And there are passions, intense feelings, but they also, they burn up and crumble to ashes while they're blazed. But still, what all these things do is that they kindle, they light up, energize our common earth, our earthiness, with their brief flame. So this is very; these are very important helps in our development.
What's the word limbed mean?
Limbed. It's a word that artists use. I think it means outlined or drawn. He uses it several times in the poem. Sudanya.
The creature insignificant and small, visited uplifted by an unknown law. Man delivered from his little patch of art, for links to lust in yours, suffer and die. A spirit that perish not with a body and breath was there like a shadow of unknown and stood behind the little blossom of thought, but playing not yet this earthly embodiment. Ascending to nature's long through human life, watching the works of his own bodies, unknown, unfair, the mind escapes, and nothing shows the glory that is there. The wisdom awarding the mystic world, the silence listening to the cry of life, it sees the herring down of moment's scale towards the still witness of a distant all.
So beautiful. We human beings, we are insignificant, small creatures, but we do get visited sometimes. We do get uplifted by an unknown power. We don't know what it is that lifts us up sometimes. So man labored on his little patch of earth. Each of us does that, no? For means to last, to enjoy, to suffer and die. So behind that life of that insignificant small creature, there's a spirit that perished not with the body and breath. It's there like a shadow of the unmanifest, of what has not yet been manifested. It's standing behind the little personal form, but hasn't claimed yet the earthly embodiment. Perhaps this is what Naren was asking. Psychic being may be there, the spirit, but it hasn't entered into the body and taken possession of it, hasn't started directly guiding it. But that mighty witness is there, that spirit. It assents to nature's long, slow-moving toil. It doesn't mind how long nature takes. He watches the works of his own ignorance. The witness, no? Unknown, unfelt, he lives in us or around us, and nothing shows the glory that is here. A wisdom governing the mystic world. a silence, listening to the cry of life. It, that witness consciousness, spirit, that witness, witness spirit, sees the hurrying crowd of moments stream towards the still greatness of a distant hour, an hour of greater fulfillment. So in this section, Sri Aurobindo has shown us two different ways at looking at the evolution of our world and ourselves. Next time we'll have a look at what comes next. Shall we listen to Mother reading some of these lines? Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.